Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to one of my favorite segments on the program each and every week. And I love it because we talk to two booksellers from two amazing bookstores, two independent booksellers from two amazing independent bookstores, who tell us what books we should pay attention to. So much comes out in any given time. And this just gives us a sense of what's there. So they'll tell us what's happening, what's new on shelves. In Matt's case, he'll tell us what came out in 1994, and it's great. it's really exciting. He'll tell you things that sound very exciting, and you think, oh, I didn't know that was coming out. And he'll say, oh, well, Reagan was president when it first came out. But
is it still in print?
Yeah.
I've noticed with Matt, it doesn't usually matter.
I like to talk about books.
Yes, you like to talk about books, and we love having you here for exactly that reason. Joan Grenier is a dear, dear friend of this program. Both of these booksellers have been with us since the very beginning of this segment, and we couldn't be more thrilled to have them, both hailing from the state of Massachusetts. Joan Grenier is owner of the Odyssey Bookshop in South Hadley, Massachusetts. 50 what years? How many years?
Oh, come on. No, it's 60.
Oh, geez.
62
years.
Wait, is that right?
63.
Good for you.
1963.
Oh, that's amazing.
You started it.
Yeah, so that's
62 years.
62, yeah.
And how many for you?
Coming up to 50.
All right.
I'm just a kid.
So, yeah, but you have a movie. I don't have a movie.
That's a whole lot of book selling.
And a play, too. I'll tell you about that.
Oh, okay.
All right. It's a whole lot of book selling.
We don't get to see each other.
No,
so.
I know. It's nice. I love talking to both of you, and I'm thrilled we're doing it both on and off air. So Matt is here. Joan is here. We'll find out what's going on. I just want to make sure you know that Odyssey Bookshop is in South Hadley, Massachusetts. The bookstore is in Lenox, Massachusetts. And I'll give you the information, their websites and all of that at the end of the segment. All right, Joan, let's begin with you.
Okay, well, I'm going to start with a novel. And the author is coming to us on September 9th. So we're very excited. It's called Little Great Island. And it's a novel that's very relevant to our times because it deals with climate change that is wreaking havoc on our planet. Mari McGavin returns to the little great island in Maine on the run from an abusive cult in South Carolina. Her son is 6 years old. His name is Levy. And she said she never would return to the island. I also said I would never run my father's bookstore.
That's right.
So, you know,
I remember that.
Life changes.
So I'm drawn to this a little bit.
Yes, okay. I understand.
This island has only 285 full-time residents, but she has no other choice because she had to run away from this cult. In the intervening years, she has learned a great deal about farming and regenerative techniques. Climate change has warmed the waters, and the lobsters are moving north, and Mari's father is hard-pressed to make a living from the sea. Meanwhile, a venture capitalist firm wants to buy up the best agricultural land for an executive retreat, of course. Can the islanders and the summer people work together to build a sustainable farming operation that would benefit the island and the planet? You'll have to read this book to find out. And if you want to meet the author, come to the Odyssey on September 9th at 7 p.m.
That sounds terrific. Again, the name of the author again was?
Kate Woodworth and Little Great Island.
Little Great Island is the name of the book.
And look at this book cover.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of color.
That brings you right into it.
It is Little Great Island by Kate Woodworth. Matt, go ahead.
Okay, so this Kate somebody, she's a novelist. Well, I just found out about another novelist.
It's Kate somebody. Kate Woodworth.
I just said it. Thank you.
Thank you.
I just found out about Jane Austen. Seriously.
Just figured that one out, did you?
So I found a book by Rachel Cohen.
Okay.
You know her book called Austen Years?
I do not.
It came out a couple of years ago. Last month when I was on, I told Sarah about another Rachel Cohen book called Chance Meeting. And so I discovered this author. She's not Patrick Modiano, but I do like her a lot. Every time Patrick Modiano has a new book, Joe hears about it. He's the first to hear about it. So Rachel Cohen has written a book called Austen Years, but I'm going to talk about that next. For the first, I'm going to talk about... So I found out about Jane Austen. I have never read Jane Austen, ladies and gentlemen of the working press. And so I found Jane Austen's Bookshelf by Rebecca Romney. And I think, was she on your show, Rebecca Romney?
Yes.
Okay, she was on the Bookshelf. I know one of the other booksellers last spring had talked about this book. So this is a book about discovering that Jane Austen had predecessors, women writers who she learned from. And I didn't know about those either. So this is a fascinating book, Jane Austen's Bookshelf. Rebecca Romney is a rare book dealer, rare book collector, and she found out, she talks a lot about the Jane Austen books that she has discovered and bought and sold. So I still haven't read Jane Austen, but I have two books about her that I'm just thrilled about.
Okay. I think it's supposed to go the other way around, right?
I'm supposed to read the book by the author first.
Meaning you read Jane Austen, right, and then you say, oh, I wonder what.
Yeah, yeah. So
yeah, that's all right.
Backing into Jane Austen. That's
all right. Yeah.
All six novels I'm going to read this year.
The two books, Jane Austen's Bookshelf.
By Rebecca Romney, a rare book collector's quest to find the women writers who shaped a legend. Because Jane Austen learned from these writers. And then the other one is The Austen Years, Rachel Cohen, about the year that she spent when her first child was born and the year that her beloved father died. She read nothing but Jane Austen to guide her through that year.
Amazing. Austen Year by Rachel Cohen. Okay.
So I snuck two books in there.
Yeah, I noticed that. Now, where's the rare book dealer from?
From Washington, D.C.
Washington. Did you say that?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. My phone was ringing in my ear there. I don't know if you heard it, but...
No. Okay. But that's all right.
My hearing aid, I can hear it. It's very
it has
strange.
A Bluetooth. No, it's very cool.
But my phone is out there, so...
Oh, I see. Well...
I was afraid you would hear it, but you didn't hear it.
No.
Right?
It was worse. We've had people in the studio who have had that technology who have actually taken the calls on the air. So that we thank you for not doing that.
I'm more polite than that.
I know.
Joe.
I know you are.
Okay, the next book is a Swedish bestseller called When the Cranes Fly South. And I'm not going to know how to pronounce this, the Swedish, but her name is Elisa Ridzen, Ridzen. It's her first book, and it's been a runaway bestseller. It just came out from Vintage and paperback. It's really a moving portrait of the last year of the life of a Swedish man named Bo. He's the main narrator, and he tells the story of his family and how he feels about the current situation. I've been through the death of my parents and my in-laws. You know, I know a little bit about the end stages of life. And notes in the he tells the story of his family and how he feels about them. Yeah, okay, I said that. Notes in the journal that his caregivers keep are interspersed throughout the novel. Bo's father was abusive, and he couldn't wait to get away from him. For most of his life, Bo worked in a timber mill in northern Sweden. The love of his life and his wife, Frederica, has dementia and does not recognize him. Mm-hmm. Yes. His closest companion is his elk hound named Sixten. His divorced son believes the dog is too much for Bo.
Right.
So you see where this is going. And this is a major source of tension between father and son. The novel depicts the simple yet sometimes complex and always heartbreaking end-of-life issues we all face with family, friends, and ourselves. It's, you know, he's of a certain generation where it's hard to tell his son that he loves him and that he's proud of him, but, you know, he gets around to it. One of the most touching parts of the book is that he has a jar with his wife's scarf in it. So when he's feeling...
Yes, he has to go there.
He goes there, and it's a lot of solace for Bo. I had tears at the end of the book.
This sounds so delightful. So.
But it's so well written, and the characters stay with you.
Yeah.
So I highly recommend it. Even though it's a bit sad.
Yeah. It's When the Cranes Fly South by
Great Lisa. Title.
Yes, it is, by Lisa Ridzen.
And it's vintage books? Paperback?
Yeah, came out in paperback.
Excellent, excellent. August Reminds 5th. Me of Ebenezer LePage. Did you ever read that book about the old man on Guernsey Island?
No.
But there's not that kind of tension, but other tender moments of, and recollections of a life of people who were there who are not there anymore, and etc.
Yeah, so they don't want him to go walk with the dog. You know, he's spent his life in the woods. I'm like,
right.
What if he falls and dies in the woods? Okay.
Yeah. Children.
All right, you're up, sir.
The next one I have is a book that I don't have here with me because it just came out and don't have my copies yet, but it's the collected poems of Wendy Cope. Mm-hmm. Do we know anything about Wendy Cope, the British poet? Her first collection came out.
I do not.
She just win something? A prize?
Maybe she. I don't know. I've been reading her for many years. Her first book came out in the mid '80s. The title of it, a collection of poems called "Making Cocoa for Kingsley Amis," and if I may, I'm going to recite the poem. The title poem.
I'd love for you to do that.
"Making Cocoa for Kingsley Amis." It was a dream I had last week, and a record somehow seemed vital. I knew it wouldn't be much of a poem, but I love the title.
Oh, that's great.
So that's Wendy Cope. She also wrote a poem called On Giving Up Smoking. There's not a Shakespeare sonnet or Beethoven quartet that's easier to like than you or harder to forget. You think that sounds extravagant? I haven't finished yet. I like you more than I would like to have a cigarette.
Good stuff.
That's Wendy Cope. So collected poems. I've been looking for her poems for years in the States. They only published in the UK.
Faber and Faber
has now a collected poems as well as a selected that are just now available from IPS. So Wendy Cope collected poems.
Excellent. That's really good. Good stuff. Joan.
Well, this is my last novel.
All right.
It's called Heartwood by Amity Gage. Came out in May, so I don't know if she was on with you, Joe.
Yes.
I have always been fascinated by people who climb the Appalachian Trail. I'm not going to get to it. But, I loved hiking. I still like it. I can't do it as the same way I used to. Their perseverance really astounds me. You know, how do you do this long trip for so long? This suspenseful novel transports the reader to the northern part of the trail, the densely forested Maine woods. Mm. 200 miles from the end of the trail, 42-year-old nurse Valerie Gillis has gone missing. Valerie is one of the three strong female characters in Heartwood. One of the other ones is Beverly Miller. She's a Maine state warden, and she's leading the search teams. The other woman is Lena Kocharski. She's 76. She's living in a retirement community in Connecticut, so you wonder how she's going to fit in. Mm. But she's able. She's a forager. She's an armchair detective, a birder, voracious reader, and able to hack emails. Valerie is writing to her mother in her journal. Not sure if she'll ever see her again. One of the amazing parts of this was the search.
Please, right?
Yes, please.
So this is from Bev, who's leading the search. It's difficult to understand what kind of woods these are until you see them. They aren't your normal woods with gentle slopes full of filtered sunlight and big hardwoods that create a tidy understory. The trees battle for light, everything reaching, even the tiny seedlings sprouting in the leaf hummus. These woods are a chaos of rock, dirt, brush, and root. They have a close, almost bloody smell. Searchers don't walk so much as crawl, disentangle, and bushwhack. In a grid search, which is what they're doing, a line of searchers moves through the woods within sight of one another. When they get to the end of their pass, the line pivots. One person stays at the axis, the rest of the line comes around, then spaces out accordingly, ready to walk the opposite way. In open hardwood, searches might be 50 feet apart, but in the woods, searchers must stay close together. As they swim through the head-high saplings, they vanish to each other. So it's an amazing search that goes on for quite a while. Of course, I can't tell you the ending, but it is a page-turner. But slow down, because it really engages with many themes of this novel, including mother-daughter relationships, there's three of them, possible failure, and the will to survive.
The name of the book is Heartwood by Amity Gage. All right.
I would like to read that book. I would like to read.
Do you want to take
some,
it?
Some, I have copies, thank
okay.
you.
I'm
but good. You, can. You can. You're free to.
It's really very good.
Will you give me some extra time then? Can I buy some time from you, Joe?
Yeah.
Thanks so much.
Sure.
I have, instead of the novel, I have a biography of an old friend of mine. This is a, well, we never knew each other. Here Beside the Rising Tide. Here Beside, well. He,
I understand how you mean.
You know what
it.
I mean. He was a buddy.
Somebody that you consider an important person in your life, as if a friend.
Here Beside the Rising Tide, Jerry Garcia, The Grateful Dead, and An American Awakening by Jim Newton. Jim Newton has written other books. I think this is his first foray into a rock and roll biography. And he's brought everything he knows about Jerry Garcia, including starting with Jack Kerouac and Jerry Garcia being turned on the Road. Jack Kerouac, he goes to Ken Kesey, Garcia's neighbor in Menlo Park on Perry Lane. He goes to Bill Graham. He goes to, who else do I have here? Neil Cassidy, Robert Hunter, the lyricist. So Jim Newton has provided us with a great biography of Jerry Garcia and the Grateful Dead. He even talks about that great concert, the Europe 72 tour that the Grateful Dead did that I saw in Paris back when Jerry Garcia and I were that close.
A deadhead.
Well, not quite a deadhead, I did like them a lot. And so this is a great book. The other book that goes along with this, just like I have two Jane Austen books and I don't have the other one, is a memoir by Robert Hunter. Mm-hmm. And I was going to bring it, but somebody bought the last copy off the shelf yesterday and I couldn't get another copy right away. Joan, do you have one? At the store?
I'm not going back an hour and a half to get it for you.
Thank you. So Here Beside the Rising Tide, a biography of Jerry Garcia and the Grateful Dead and their history, the history of the late 50s in California and into the 60s, 70s, and beyond into Garcia's death in the 90s, I guess.
Yeah.
So Jerry Garcia was my hero. He died in his 50s. He was my hero in the 60s. And he died in his 50s. My hero in the 50s was Mickey Mantle, who died in his 60s. So, and they died within weeks of each other. Just, I thought your radio audience would like to know.
Did you ever meet him?
No.
Yeah, okay.
We almost, at the Grand Hotel in Paris, the day after the concert, I was with a guy who knows him.
Yeah.
And we were supposed to meet the dead, but they had checked out of the hotel by then.
All right, I want to get to everybody's books,
yep.
but I'm an independent bookseller. I'm going to college, and I'm working in a store in Saratoga. And the Grateful Dead is performing at the Saratoga Performing Arts Center. Guy comes in and says, "Do you mind closing the store for 20 minutes?"
Mm.
And we said,
"I know where this is going."
We said, "No, we don't mind closing the store for 20 minutes." And in comes Jerry Garcia.
Oh, stop it.
Yeah. And walked around the store, bought a lot of books, bought a lot of horror books, spent some good money. And
cash?
No. Oh, okay. No. And in fact, that was the cool part because it was the old days when you had the credit card.
But you had the good little machine there.
Well, yes, but the good signature.
Right.
But then he took Polaroids with us and he signed them and couldn't have been lovelier. Just such a nice interaction.
Gentle guy, right.
Yeah, very, very nice.
Good for you.
So it was very fun.
That's a great story.
Yeah, it was fun. It was good. Just one of my many exciting book-selling tales, as you, too,
yes,
know
we,
all too well.
We do have some of those.
Yes.
That's another program, right?
Yeah, that's right.
That's right.
Okay, my next book is Zach Adams' Birds of New England. It's the first, the first new book on the birds of New England. It's beautiful. It's from Timber Press, which does great gardening, nature, and, other books. And he came to our store in July, and he was terrific. Do you know him? Is
no.
he out here?
No, there was a story in the local paper about him just the other day. That's how I found out about the book.
So it's for the beginner or the advanced birder, somewhere in between. It gives a lot of details on bird identification, etc. 350 species covered in this book. It's also a lovely flexi-bound book.
Yeah, Timber Press.
Really
good for
holds
them.
Together. And the other little thing is it has a ruler on the back. So, you can kind of say, is that a 4-inch bird or a 7-inch bird?
Oh.
Take out the book and measure it up.
Am I a big bird?
My husband John said, what good does that do to you? I said, I can kind of,
Yeah.
I like the ruler.
All right. It just seems like there's going to be like a hawk or something, and you're going to do one of those things like...
Well, no.
All right, well, you put your
These
finger...
These are the songbirds.
You put your finger on one part of the bird and say, okay, now I have to move the ruler down.
Okay, you guys are making fun of me.
No, not at all.
Ganged up here.
No, that's good. It's I saw this. I, like Matt, saw this in the paper. It's really cool. Birds of New England by Zach Adams. Good stuff. That's a beautiful book. All right.
Yeah.
Next up.
My last book is a book that is not quite 1994. It's more like 1935.
Okay.
This is Bertolt Brecht's Fear and Misery of the Third Reich. These are 24 scenes of a play of characters living in Nazi Germany, 1933 to 1938, and the fear and the... what they're going through and not talking to each other. There was a Berkshire Theater Group, Kate McGuire and Eric Hill did one of these scenes at the theater years ago, and I was asked to help along.
Husband and wife.
And a Jewish wife who calls her friends and says, listen, I'm going out of town for a couple of days. Would you look in on my husband? It turns out she's Jewish. He's not. He's a doctor. She wants to leave because she's going to save his life, and he doesn't want to talk about it. And this is the kind of conversations that are happening and not happening in this country today.
Yes.
So that's why, and I've been selling lots of copies of this book for the last 6-8 months.
Bertolt Brecht, Fear and Misery of the Third Reich, published beautifully by Bloomsbury. Yeah. All right, Joan, I think you get the last word.
Okay. Well, I just finished over the weekend a book that's coming out on September 2nd, and it's the memoir of by Arundhati Roy.
Oh.
What?
Yeah. No, I no.
Have you read it?
She turned me down for an interview, but I'm okay.
Oh.
I'll be all right. Okay. I'm a little bitter, but I'm okay.
Well, have you read it? It's really fascinating.
That's part of the bitterness.
Okay.
Go ahead.
All right. Mother Mary Comes to Me is a reference to her mother. I think it's a remarkable memoir, and she's had such a fascinating life. She's born in 61. Her parents separated when she was very little. Her mother, Mary, is always called Mrs. Roy by her children. And
no kidding.
She leaves her alcoholic husband in search of a place to raise her kids and support them. But they have, no money when this happens. However, she is incredibly verbally abusive, as well as throwing plates and everything else to her daughter, especially, and the people that work with her. But she ends up setting up an incredible school and does this for several decades.
This is the mother.
The mother.
Right.
I'm going to give you a 30-second warning, but
okay.
Go ahead.
Arundhati leaves at 18. Her mother doesn't know where she is or what she's doing for 7 years, but she's in architecture school in Delhi. She's learning Hindi. And she's scraping by. As you probably know, she goes on to write and win the Booker, her first novel,
right.
Wins the Booker Prize. She's 36 years old. She does a lot of other things in between, screenplays, political articles and essays about...
Politics is what I know, yeah.
Yeah, her political writing. Anyway,
Mother Mary Comes to Me by Arundhati Roy. We'd love to tell you more about it. And if she was a guest on the show, we would. But it's really great. It's a terrific story.
What a story.
I thank both of you for being here.
Do I have 10 seconds?
No, but go ahead.
The Wit Festival in September at Shakespeare.
Oh, that's
Company.
Right.
Arundhati Roy is not going to be there either.
No, but they got some great folks coming up.
Yeah.
All right. Find out more, WAMC.org/roundtable. Joan and Matt, you're both wonderful. I so appreciate you being here.